Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thrown up play by Ty Lue. Spins on him and scores.
LeBron James. The defense is backing up. That's when you attack.
LeBron falling and knocks it down from three. 3-0 as the buzzer sounded for 24 seconds. LeBron James sticks it fully and calmly.
Yeah, he just turned around and shot over top of Parker that time.
LeBron James thinking about it. Sends it. Got it. Oh. Home button, LeBron James.
Oh.
He nailed it. Cavaliers by two with 24 ticks left. Final seconds ticking away. A wine-and-go winner. Good night, Milwaukee. We'll see you on the flip side at the queue.
I mean, big shots. They were going under all night. We told them, if they go under, you got to step into it and take that shot. I mean, he can make that shot. And the last one was pretty far out. I didn't know he was going to take that one. I mean, it was a big shot that we needed. And, you know, that's why he's the best player in the world.
Coach drew up a great play. It was for us to get a clear side. Channing flashed to the ball. And my man went under my screen. I had been hitting my three ball tonight. I felt confident about it. And if guys going to go that far underneath my pick and roll, I got to be able to shoot it and knock it down. And I was able to do that.
He had some imaging this morning done in Cleveland, and he is going to require surgery on that thumb and is going to miss what I've been told is an extended period of time. They're still evaluating options. I don't really want to put a timetable on it because they're still doing it, so I'm not saying this is the timetable for him, but typically in the event of a surgery on a finger or a thumb, it's usually a 4 to 6 week injury.
They all go through a stretches of adversity, which they have to be able to overcome. They generally display that during the course of the year. I think our team's done that. I think our team's come over and overcome a lot of adversity along the way and have all the makings for it. But the fact of the matter is you got to do it. I mean, that's the real key. There's no magic to it. So you got a little adversity you got to overcome and fight back and get yourself in position to do something. And, you know, you got the right kind of people, the right kind of men, you know, they'll come together and fight their way through it, you know, and get better. And that's kind of the path we're on right now.
It's going to start up front. You know, Ziggy Ansah, Haloti Ngata, Tyron Walker, they got to play a great game up front. It all starts with stopping Ezekiel Elliott and trying to get them behind in the down and distance. It sounds cliche, but if you don't stop the run with some success, it's impossible to get after a rookie quarterback. But when you get after the rookie quarterback, how do you do it? Because you really don't want to play man-to-man against Dez Bryant without Darius Slay. You're still going to struggle with Witten, Williams. They have a lot of guys that can hurt you. This is a tough, tough offense to stop.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the extravaganza with you once again right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Good Wednesday afternoon to you. Thanks for spending some time with us. Jim Cushlin, are you finished Christmas shopping yet?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
I'm impressed. Four days to spare?
Yeah, I'll admit we're not finished with the wrapping part, though.
How much does Mrs. Claus do versus how much Mr. Cushlin does?
The vast majority, because I am the world's worst wrapper.
You are the world's worst rapper?
In terms of wrapping gifts, not the other kind of
wrapping. I was going to say, let me hear it. You bust
a couple. No, I'm pretty bad on that, too. I'm not even going there.
You can't freestyle for us?
No, not with the cold I'm dealing with.
Can't even give us the Jim Harbaugh line?
I don't think I should try. Everybody will tune out right away. We won't have a show anymore.
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, I'll take you at your word. So, Christmas is almost here, so to those who are still out, maybe in the cars right now or on the way to some mall or shop or whatever the case might be, thanks
for
tuning in.
I'm sorry for you.
I do. I feel badly for you, too. I got to tell you, one of two things has happened to me. Either I've matured through the years and figured out how to really, really get ahead of the game, because we're done, and we've been done for a bit. My wife and I, either I have matured and really kind of figured this out, because I used to be the guy who was scrambling, you know, on the 23rd, the 24th, maybe even running around and finishing things up.
I remember those days.
Yeah. So either one thing, I grew up and got more mature, or the second thing, I just wisely stepped the hell out of the way and let my wife do it all. I'm leaning toward the latter, because I kind of stepped the hell out of the way and let her do it all. She's a type A personality who likes to do stuff anyway, so all I had to do is get out of the way. I do rap pretty well, by the way, in both ways. I rap presents well, W-R-A-P well, and I rap pretty well, as long as it's old school rap. I will bust a Sugar Hill Gang move out my you-know-what. I'll tell you that right now. I'll do some Sugar Hill Gang. I'll do some Curtis Blow. I'll do some Dr. Dre and Snoop from 1990, 91, 92 in the Chronic era, believe it or not. I can bust some of those, but I don't buy. I don't shop. I just let the wife take care of all that. And, well, gee, lo and behold, look what happens. Everything's done way ahead of time. So there you go. That's a nice strategy, I got to tell you. I highly recommend it. Find yourself a wife who's a type A OCD personality, because that's what she is. She's type A. She likes to do things her way, and she's OCD, which means she has to make sure everything gets done just right, and then all I got to do is take credit for it when it's over.
I guess I would have to say my wife's a very similar, and we only just matured, I guess, this year by realizing that, and therefore got all taken care of already.
There you go. Hey, by the way, I was right still on the MVP thing. Just looking at the ESPN NFL MVP poll, not that this matters a ton. Right now, there's still a couple of games to play, but I said it after last week, and it remains true. Tom Brady still in the driver's seat despite playing four less games than everybody else because of the suspension. And according to the ESPN NFL MVP poll results, Tom Brady leads with 6 first-place votes and 6 second-place votes. Now, this goes back to that stupid system, you know, that everybody uses for MVP things and Cy Young things and on. Remember how we talked about this?
Oh, yeah.
So stupid. You know, Justin Verlander got more votes for first place than he finished in second place.
Yep.
Wait, what? Stupid. But it's how they do it. And ESPN's NFL MVP results look like this. Tom Brady won with 6 first and 6 seconds, no thirds, fourths, or fifths, 54 points. A relatively distant second with only 2 first-place votes and 5 thirds and 3 fourths is Derek Carr, 36 points. Ezekiel Elliott, we wondered if he had played his way, if he had crashed the quarterback party, and indeed he has. Zeke Elliott is in third. Actually, take that back. Now, why do they list it like that, I'm wondering? They both... Zeke tied Derek Carr with 36 points. Zeke has 3 first-place votes, 2 seconds, 3 thirds, a fourth, and 2 fifths. And they listed Derek Carr ahead of him. And he only had 2 first-place. To me, if you are looking for a tiebreaker, how is that not number of first-place votes?
I know, right?
So stupid. Anyway, Matt Ryan, 33 points total. Aaron Rodgers has moved up to 5th in this race. 1 first-place vote with 13 points. Matthew Stafford way down after a couple of weeks of non-prolific passing numbers and after a loss. Now, too, this certainly matters. They lost. I think if he'd have won and if he'd had a big game and beaten the Giants on the road, and, you know, it would be 6 straight and they're steamrolling toward a division title and all the rest, I think it probably would have changed a lot. But for now, Matthew Stafford, not with a first, second, or third place vote. 2 fourths and 3 fifths, 7 points, way down the list now in the MVP voting. Well, not voting, but in the ESPN MVP poll results. Then Dak Prescott, then the only 2 running backs other than Zeke on the list, way, way down there, obviously, in the 9 and 10 spots are David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. Justin Tucker, the kicker for the Ravens, actually has a 5th place vote, as does Russell Wilson, the quarterback at the Seahawks, with a fifth place vote. So there you go, Tom Brady. You know, I wonder about that too, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I think the fact that Tom Brady is having the kind of season he is, despite the 4-game suspension, is aided by the fact that he had the 4-game suspension. And now you say, what the hell are you talking about? Well, here's what the hell I'm talking about. What was the 4-game suspension for?
Deflategate.
It was for Deflategate. Allegedly for deflating footballs to give himself a competitive advantage on the football field as a quarterback, right? What did we say after that whole thing went down at halftime of the playoff game against the Indianapolis Colts 2 years ago? What did we say? They spotted it then, and then all of the balls were checked again at halftime and made sure they were at proper inflation levels. And what did Tom Brady do? He went out there and scored 28 unanswered points. I think he threw four touchdowns, threw for 200 and some odd yards in the second half, and just completely demolished the Colts, right?
Right.
To me, this is the same thing. In the they've played 14 games. They've played 14 games. So he's played 10 games. Everybody else has played 14. He missed the first four. What do you think happened in those last 10 games? Obviously, nobody's touching footballs. Nobody's deflating anything. There's no controversy. I mean, if anything ever was to be a lock, it would be that when Tom Brady returned from suspension, you know, they're never going to go near this issue again. They're never going to talk about it. So here's Tom Brady not able to successfully deflate footballs, as people said he had to do in order to have the success, his cheating ways and all the rest. It tainted his accomplishments and so on. In 12 games, with absolutely no chance whatsoever, right? No chance whatsoever that he's touching any footballs in any illegal way whatsoever. All he's doing is going out there and having one of his best seasons. In 10 games, mind you, just 10, he's completing 66.9% of his passes compared to 64% the year before, 64% the year before, 3,064 yards, 22 touchdowns, two picks, just two, and a quarterback rating of 109.7. Compared to last year's 102.2, compared to the year before in 97.4, compared to 2013 with 87.3, compared to the 2012 season 98.7, compared to 2011 105.5 or 6, and then 2010 we've got to go all the way back to 2010 to find another season better than this one in terms of quarterback rating with 111. And then if you really want to, you can go back to 2007 when he had a quarterback rating of 117. That was the year he threw 50 touchdowns when he had 117. So this is, statistically speaking, the third best year of his career. And it's at the age of 39. And Tom Brady is playing with fully inflated footballs. You can bet your house on it. Given the fact that they lost a draft pick, they lost $1 million from the club. Did Belichick get fined $250,000, or was Brady personally? I can't remember exactly how that whole thing went down as far as all the punishments for individuals. But we know that the Patriots lost a draft pick. It was obviously a big national embarrassment. He had the 4-game suspension. I guarantee you he is playing with fully inflated footballs, and all he's doing is saying, hey, you know what? To anybody who thinks I needed to have an underinflated football to have a great season, or to dominate, or to be what I am, take this and stick it. KMA, fools, is what Tom Brady, that's the kind of season he's having right now. Now, if he has two more great games, and he only gets to play 12 out of the 16, I promise you, he is going to have this MVP, and I promise you, it will be the sweetest, and I just hope, and he's not really that much of a cocky guy that he would say something and is an accepted speech, but I hope that he makes a point of it then, because I'm openly rooting for him now to win the MVP. Mind you, I am not rooting for the Patriots to win the AFC. I'm not rooting for them to win the Super Bowl. I'm not rooting for them to win next week. I don't like the Patriots. I don't like Bill Belichick. I don't even really like Tom Brady. As I've said before, I'm in the Brady versus Manning, you know, saga of the last 15 years or more. I liked Manning better. I got no reason to do this other than I was so sick of the stupidity of that argument that Tom Brady's success came from altering the football. Really? Well, he's playing with non-altered footballs this year, and all he's doing is having statistically his third best season of his career at the age of 30 bleeping nine. Are you serious? Yes, he should win the MVP if he has two more solid weeks. Yes, he should have the MVP, and no, it should not even be close. Kush?
No, I agree with this. I mean, we've been almost bringing this up these last couple weeks in a way to prepare, especially Lions fans who, and there's still a legitimate argument for this, to have Matthew Stafford in the discussion for this. So, in a way, none of this really
surprises me. I think the
argument
has gotten weaker for Stafford.
Yeah, no question.
I think that position he's in right now, I can't really complain about it. 1-2, what did I say he was in? 6th?
Yep.
Yeah, he's 6th behind Brady Carr, Elliott, Ryan, Rodgers, and Stafford. And, yeah, I can legitimately say Rodgers. I mean, if just look at him number by number, you know, just looking at all of the passing stats, I think I can pretty much make the case that Aaron Rodgers is probably, you know, ahead of Matthew Stafford. Even though Stafford has a one-game lead in the division, Aaron Rodgers has completed 63% of his passes. Stafford, 54%. Is that right? 54.5? Is that right? Hold on a second. Hold on. I got to double check that stat for a second here. That doesn't look right to me. That doesn't look right to me at all. But, no, it's not. That's not passing percentage. My apologies. I'm going to have to pull up the different stat here because I was pulling up the QBR and it was assigning points for various things here. That's not what I was looking for. Hold on one second. Here we go. Aaron Rodgers is completing 65% of his passes, 32 touchdowns, 7 picks, averaging 270 yards a game. Stafford, 66%. That's more like it. So he actually is completing a little bit more of a higher number of passes in terms of percentage. For 3,700 yards, almost identical, 22 and 8. So Rodgers, 32 and 7. Stafford, 22 and 8. Almost identical in terms of yards per game, almost identical in terms of completion percentage. I have no problem nudging Aaron Rodgers up ahead of Matthew Stafford at this stage of that discussion. Go ahead.
No, I kind of agree with that. And there's not much really almost to argue unless Brady somehow completely implodes, and I fail to see how that's going to happen these last 2 weeks. I think he's almost a shoo-in at this point to end up winning it. And my notation today, especially on this kind of subject, for any Lions fans who may want to gripe about that and say, well, Stafford should at least be higher on the list. Honestly, that's not the argument I want to have if I'm a Lions fan today.
You want to go Pro Bowl. I know. Let me, you know what, and I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. And we're going to talk to Justin Rodgers about that coming up in what, about 40 minutes or so?
Yep.
And I'm fine with that. Let's have that conversation. But before I do, just to throw this back out there, Matt Ryan, to me, is the guy that is not getting enough love in this. Not Matthew Stafford, but Matthew Ryan, Matty Ice. And the reason why is I was throwing those numbers at you, and again, I'm giving Brady the best numbers because of all of the things that I just described. In terms of quarterback rating, though, Matt Ryan, is blowing all of them out of the water. Matt Ryan has a quarterback rating right now of 114.8. And I just mentioned to you Rodgers' 32-7 touchdown-interception ratio, which is terrific. Identical to Matt Ryan's 32-7. The difference being, Ryan is completing 68.6% of his passes. That's 4% higher than Rodgers for 4,336 yards through 14 games to 3,781. So about 500 more yards. So more yards, higher completion percentage, identical 32-7 touchdown to interception ratio, and a much better record. Well, not much better, actually. I take that back. So I think there's just a game difference between Atlanta and Green Bay right now anyway. But Matt Ryan is the guy. If anybody deserves, you know, or should complain here about this, it would be Matt Ryan to me. And the reason why, as I say, is because it's Brady 1, which I have no problem with. I give him the benefit of that doubt, as I pointed out. But Derek Carr maybe still holding on to that number 2 spot. That's a bit of a problem for me. I think I would have to bump Ryan, who's sitting in 4th, the third quarterback, but in 4th place overall because of Ezekiel Elliott's imposing upon this this quarterback list with his running back greatness. But Matt Ryan deserves, I think, if anybody, to be higher than the list, much more so than Matthew Stafford does.
I kind of have to agree with that right now, too. I mean, the real debate, if you want to have one on those two in their teams, is which one and where they're at is more of a surprise, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, certainly the Lions are much more of a surprise to be where they are. And I'll tell you something else, and this is not that this is, you know, the be all end all issue, but the help and the surroundings and all the rest, you know, the supporting cast has to have an impact on this too. And if you approach it from that, you know, from that vantage point, you know, what does Matthew Stafford have? His number one receiver has turned out to be Golden Tate, who's a very good receiver, but he's not Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., Dez Bryant, all those kinds of guys, right? He's the best the Lions have, but he's not one of the best in the game. And then you look at the running backs, too, and look at the running games that the Falcons can throw out there versus what the Lions have, which is essentially, virtually nothing. Nothing at all. No running game at all for the Lions. And I think you have, and they both have the same record. They're both 9-5. I thought there was a one-game difference, but that's not correct. But, you know, if you look at it from that standpoint, Devontae Freeman has almost 1,000 yards and 10 rushing touchdowns for the Falcons. So it's a lot easier load for Ryan, too. So while I'll praise him and I won't back off anything I just said, I will give a little bit of a nod there to Matthew Stafford in terms of degree of difficulty, in terms of degree of getting those numbers where you want them to be. He doesn't have help offensively that some of these other guys do, and I'll make that point. It's 3:27, but we can start this conversation and continue it on the other side. And I know people on hold already on Brady and Rodgers, but do you want to – boy, oh boy. I'll tell you what. I'm going to change my mind. Let me go to some phone calls on Brady and Rodgers. Then we'll have the conversation about the Pro Bowl selections, because it is a very interesting point that Jim Cushman is about to make. I know what he's going to make, as we talked about it before the show. And I think it's a very valid one, and we'll get your thoughts on that too. But I do have people on hold on want to talk about Brady and Rodgers. So let's get there. Jimmy is in Toledo. You are up first, Jimmy. Thanks for waiting. You're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Merry Christmas to you. Go right ahead.
Hey, listen, I'm not ever going to dispute how good Brady is. I always thought the Deflategate was not about Brady as much as it might have been about the receivers and the running backs holding on to the ball. They play that dink and dunk thing, and they very rarely ever fumble. And then I heard a statistic that they were like almost 35% less likely to fumble than the next best team in that category.
Well, my response to that, Jimmy, would be this. It wasn't any of the running backs or receivers who were allegedly telling ball boys and equipment managers to make sure to take the needle in there and adjust the footballs the way it was alleged that Brady was. They weren't the ones saying, hey, I can't hold on to a football fully inflated, deflate it by a half pound for me. It was reportedly Brady. So if it was them that were benefiting from this, you'd think they would have had a material part in this, and none of them were even named. And secondly, what I would look for now, and I don't have it in front of me, maybe you do, Jimmy, are Patriots players fumbling or dropping passes at any higher rate now that I guarantee you, as I said, I bet my house that all of these balls are fully checked, that the officials before every Patriots game are ensuring there's no funny business. Are they fumbling or dropping balls any more now than they were in 2014?
Oh, listen, don't get me wrong. That was just
no,
what
I'm asking
I
that legit. No, I'm not. It's not an accusation against you, Jimmy. I'm asking legit. Do you know?
I don't deny. No, I don't know that number, and I would suspect it's probably, like you said, the Patriots kind of play whatever they have to any given year that suits the guys they have. So you might not even be able to go. Who's to say they even did it all that many years? But I do know one thing about the Patriots. If they do something, there's a reason for it. So I'm not gonna be in a conspiracy kook and think Brady's overrated, because he's not. He's the best quarterback to ever play.
You're so on point, Jimmy, when you say they do what they have to do for the guys that they have at that time. Nobody adjusts.
So it doesn't have to be a conspiracy that you know, ranges over many years, but I do think that Belichick does whatever, and Brady and probably the core guys do whatever they think. And, you know, athletes are super duper, like, they're not going to mess with us. If they find something that works, they got this quirk, it's superstition, they might wear the same underwear every game.
Sure,
I don't know.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know
God,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, athletes are superstitious. Adjusting, though, is what I wanted to say. I mean, when you say they do whatever they have to suit the guys they have, nobody handles in-season trades better and bringing a guy in and making him a functioning part. Watch and see what Michael Floyd does when he gets activated. You know,
he's
going to
be a beast.
Oh yeah.
Everybody behaves when they go play with Tom.
I mean, they lost the best tight end in the game 3 weeks ago, and they haven't missed a beat. Rob Gronkowski is an absolute beast. He is their number one offensive weapon outside of Tom Brady. Tom Brady's comfort zone, all of those things, and all they do is just keep on going. And they're 12-2, and they still look like the favorite in the AFC. Nobody handles, hey, we got two new linemen we got to fit in. Oh, we got a new running back. We got two new wide receivers. It doesn't matter as long as Brady is the one calling signals and Bill Belichick is the one drawing up game plans. They find ways to fit in everybody that they have to and to change their game plan, their strategy, their outlook, their philosophy to fit the guys that they have around this year, to replace the guys they dumped or who signed elsewhere or got injured. They just manage. And that's why I think for the conspiracy theorists to suggest that any of Brady's success had anything to do with a ball being a half or a three quarters of a pound less inflated is just ignorance. They just know how to get things done.
Absolutely. And I'm a Steelers fan, so it pains me to say that, but I will say this, you know, some of it, the other thing is like Martellus Bennett is a physical freak. He had the talent to be Rob Gronkowski, but he didn't play with Tom Brady. He played with Jay Cutler or Tony Romo.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when guys go there, they get the most out of their role because, for one, they shut up and do what Belichick says or what Brady says, and they quit being divas. Hell, you saw that with Randy Moss.
That's right.
Okay, so it's not even just the brilliance of Belichick. It's what the guys that go into that program do. They get with the program, and then their talent takes over, and they're not playing like Odell Beckham and being a diva every other week. They just go and they be professional.
You know who I heard on a national show the other day? And Jimmy, I got to run, brother. Thanks for the call. Good stuff. I heard Chad Johnson. I think it was Chad Johnson because I listen to so many shows and I follow so many things. I think it was Chad Johnson who was asked about the Patriot way. And, you know, Chad Johnson was Chad Ochocinco. He was the hot dog. You know, he changed his name to Ochocinco and the whole nine yards with the Hall of Fame yellow jacket, with his own Hall of Fame induction and all the stupid stuff he did. And he was asked about how he changed himself when he went to the Patriots in 2011. And he was only there for a year. He said, nobody had to speak. And I'm paraphrasing this because I heard this a couple of days ago, or maybe it was even the end of last week. He said, nobody had to speak to me. Nobody had to tell me anything. He said, you show up for work with the Patriots, and there are no divas. There's no hot dogging. There's no flash. There's no anything that would just upset the business-like approach of the boss. And that's what that's the culture that Bill Belichick fosters. And it's the kind of climate that the quarterback thrives in, because Brady is the same way. He is just I'm getting this done. I don't need the drama. If you're going to bring drama with you, take it out back and get the hell out, because we don't want you here. No drama. And he said he just knew right then that he wasn't going to be the same guy he was when he was with the Bengals, because they don't allow that kind of thing. The Patriot way is a different way. And I don't like the Patriots. I'm just relaying the things that I see and the things that, guys who have been there said. And, you know, if anybody was more flamboyant than Chad Johnson, I don't know who it was. You know, maybe Terrell Owens, you know, Moss and some of the other guys. But they just recognize when you go to New England, all that stuff is done. You check that stuff at the door. And you don't get it back until you leave. And if you leave and want to go play somewhere else and get that stuff back, fine. You just don't do that while you're in New England, or else it's a short stay for you. It's a really, really amazing kind of a story to tell. But that's the point about this Brady thing. His continued dominance without Gronkowski, his continued dominance at age 39, his continued dominance after missing four games due to suspension. And I think he's probably driven by the whole entire suspension, and he wants to put up numbers in 12 games that other guys would put up in 16 and win the MVP and go to the Super Bowl and just kind of jam the ball, figuratively speaking, right between Roger Goodell's cheeks. That is what I think he wants to do. Terry's in Sylvania on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Terry, go right ahead. How are you? Hello, Terry. Can you hear me?
Yeah. How you doing, Bob?
You're on the air, brother. Go ahead, man.
Oh, I want to make a couple comments. First
Please
of all,
do.
The Lions are in deep doo-doo. If they come even with Green Bay on the last game, I'll take my shots with Rodgers.
It is at home, though. You don't have to go back to Lambeau and win again there like you did last year for the first time.
They got enough, because, you know, some of these receivers, Golden Tate's an exception. The other ones are on the end of the road. Bolden's a decent receiver, but he's on the end of the road. Jones has been in and out. Ebron's inconsistent. You know, so the Pack's got slight edge. The Lions got an edge on defense, but I don't know what they're going to have left. Stafford is, you know, overachieving with what he's got.
He really has. And that's one of the reasons why he's in that discussion, because he has completely overachieved. I don't disagree with that at all. But here's the thing, and I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but the Green Bay Packers are a Jekyll and Hyde thing, a team. We saw them lose four in a row, I think. We saw Aaron Rodgers playing terribly, or at least by his standards playing terribly, and now suddenly they're on a roll where they've won four straight, and they're right back in the thick, and they win this week, and then they come to Detroit tied for the division lead with Detroit. Let's assume the Lions lose in Dallas. You could say they're just going to roll right through them, but who's to say they don't revert back to what they were when they were really scuffling and struggling? I would probably pick them to be the favorite. I'm with you, but I'm not going to write it off and say I don't think Detroit can get it done at all.
No, but, you know, anything can happen on the last game, one game.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. And here's what disgusts me most about the Lions.
What's that?
They got this porcelain China doll, Abdullah, who's always hurt. And I watched this guy from Birmingham, you know, whatever it was, down south, and then transfers to Indiana, runs over Michigan 2 years ago, a 225-pound cold weather back. And the Lions would not take him in the first four or five rounds?
It's to their great dismay, and right now it's the biggest criticism they have is their lack of a running game, and they haven't found anybody who can run the ball. Abdullah can't be there. Epstein, as we found out, is not going to carry the ball on a regular basis. He's a receiving back. And that is, you know, probably one of the biggest needs that they have, and the fact that they have not addressed that, you know, maybe they just figured Abdullah would get healthy. I don't know, but the fact that they haven't addressed it, through the draft or in any other way is certainly one of the biggest, stumbling blocks that they've had.
Oh, okay. And we talk about Matt Ryan. Julio Jones is one of the three or four freak receivers in the league, you know, and that gives you the number one and stretches the field. That's what makes Brady's statistics even more impressive.
Such a good point. Well, I mean, think about it. Who are Tom Brady's go-to receivers? Can you even
name Gronk until he was? But
right,
now
and he's a tight end. He's a tight end, yeah, who plays the slot and plays, you know, slot receiver. Sure, fine. But who are Tom Brady's down the field wideouts? Like Ben Roethlisberger has Antonio Brown. Matt Ryan has Julio Jones. You know, you can look, you know, Dak Prescott and or Tony Romo both have, you know, a Dez Bryant. Who does Tom Brady have year in and year out as his downfield guy?
Hey, if Floyd gets out from behind a wheel, passed out, and starts catching the ball, he could be a threat.
He could be, but he hasn't. He's not there yet. He hasn't played. My point was, I mean, Amendola, Julian Edelman,
no,
a converted
college quarterback.
No, these
guys are all possession receivers. Wes Welker.
Exactly. He doesn't even have that. And can you imagine if he had Moss back or threat like, I mean, not Moss is such a unique
even
guy.
Floyd to stretch the field somewhere.
Right. Right. I mean,
you know, so
that's
then
what makes Brady. You talk about playing handicapped. You talk about playing with what are we trying to say to Matthew Stafford? How did we phrase that before with Stafford? He's
an overachiever.
Yeah. Tom Brady has overachieved given his surroundings as well, because he makes every average NFL receiver into a stud while he's with Brady. Then if he leaves Brady and goes elsewhere, he's back to being, just an average guy again. So.
It is
so true. Yeah, Welker's an example. Obviously we're watching Edelman, Amendola, all these guys go to New England, have great runs, and that's the highlight of their careers. Hey, man,
I got to run, Terry.
Bye. I appreciate it. Thanks, brother. One more from Greg in Millbury before I take this time out. We're late for the timeout, but what the hell. Let's roll on and hear from Greg. You're on the air, Greg. Go right ahead.
Hey, I'm calling about when you mentioned about Stafford and Ryan, how Stafford's ahead of him.
Yeah.
I believe, man, if you look at it, they're comebacks. Stafford, there's only three quarterbacks in the NFL that I'd really want as a comeback quarterback. And one of them's for my Steelers, Roethlisberger.
Yep.
Second is Stafford, and then Aaron Rodgers.
What about Derek Carr? I think Derek Carr leads the league this year with fourth quarter game-winning comebacks.
He does, but I mean, if you see it pass. When you get in playoff time and stuff, I mean, I'd take Roethlisberger. You got to have the experience. Carr hasn't been under that fire yet.
That's true. That is very true. So, and you're right, by the way, about Stafford. That is a very good point. I don't know. Now, here's the thing. It's one thing to say, hey, this is the guy who has had more fourth quarter comebacks, but can you hold that against a guy who hasn't had opportunities to, maybe because he's just been winning and holding leads? I don't know that that's the case with Ryan. But you know what I mean? To me, there needs to be a second stat. And I don't know that I've ever seen any of the number crunchers of the nerd groups at ESPN or anywhere else do this. But, you know, while they carry the game-winning drives and game-winning scores in the fourth quarter or overtime stat for quarterbacks like you're talking about, I would like to see games trailing in the fourth quarter that they failed to engineer that fourth quarter drive, you know, where they ran out of downs or they threw a pick or whatever it was, to really have a comparison of, you know, how many chances did you have to do this versus how many you converted. Then we'd really have an idea of who the best clutch players are.
I think I heard on ESPN that Detroit leads it right now with the most comeback fourth quarters this year.
Yeah, Stafford has eight, and that's the new record, by the way.
Yes, they do. But to the point that I'm making, because Stafford's defense has given up the lead in the fourth quarter in so many of those wins, Stafford had to engineer a comeback win. If Matt, I'm just throwing this out there because of your comparison, as we talked about Ryan.
Yeah.
If the Falcons haven't trailed seven times in their nine wins in the fourth quarter, making it necessary for Ryan to come back, then we don't say, hey, Stafford's a better clutch quarterback than Ryan because he has comeback wins and Ryan doesn't. If you don't have the opportunity because you're not trailing in the fourth quarter to have a comeback win, then it doesn't mean you're not a great clutch comeback QB. See what I'm saying?
Yep, true.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's a stat on that. That's what I would love to see.
And one more thing, man. Heck with it, man. Lions should just go get Ray Rice.
Oh, my. Hey, you know what?
You need the chance, man. Everybody, hey, you know what? In America, it's second chance, man.
Yeah, and you know what? This guy has paid a deeper and steeper price than probably anybody else ever connected with domestic violence in one of these cases, truthfully, because he has literally lost his career over it.
Yeah.
Greg Hardy got a chance to come back with Dallas, but then he just flaked
and
all that. So, yeah, it's
give him a chance, man. Let him put some food on his table.
Greg, thanks for the call, brother. I got to run. We are way late for our check of sports here. We got to get a sports center coming your way. Coming up at 4 or 5, more NFL talk with our friend Justin Rogers from the Detroit News. Coming up at 4:30 or 4:35 or so, 4:40 maybe, we're going to do one final season recap with the head coach of the UT Rockets, who lost their bowl game against Appalachian State. So Jason Candle will kind of do a post-bowl and post-season recap in his first year as head coach of the Rockets. So that will be coming up in the 4:30 part of the show. So stay where you are, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, as we continue a little NFL talk, just kind of postseason stuff right now is what we're talking about. Postseason awards, anyway. Jim Cushlin, you and I spoke off the air before we started the show today,
right,
as always. Prepping everything, and you weren't as much into the MVP thing as you were the announcement of the 2016 NFL Pro Bowl selections. Now, we can all agree the Pro Bowl is a joke. It shouldn't exist. It is a waste of time. Nobody wants to play in it. Are they still doing this crap where they have two alums draft players and they do Team Irvin versus Team Carter?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if they scrapped that or not.
Because that was awful.
I hate that, yeah.
Then again, so was the AFC versus the... I mean, it's just all awful. It's just a terrible game that nobody wants to play in, but people want the honor.
And you're right. And what have we always tagged that with? Well, let's at least see what the rosters are. See who the Pro Bowlers in this case, or All-Stars, depending on the sport. Let's just at least see the lists.
Yeah, and the guys, they don't want to play in it, but they want to be named to it because they want to be able to say, for contract purposes, I'm a four-time Pro Bowler, so I get X amount of dollars. So those kind of things do matter. Now, you pointed out a very, very surprising and startling thing about the players chosen and the players not chosen, particularly when it comes to a first place 9-win team in week number 15 of the season, a 9-5 team in week 15 of the season, first place in the division, the Detroit Lions, and their list of Pro Bowlers elected into this game as starters are
zero.
Wait, what?
Zero.
How about the list of Pro Bowlers just in general made by the for the Detroit Lions?
That would also be zero.
Wait, what? They don't have a Pro Bowler on the roster?
Nope.
How does a team with nine wins, yeah, that had won up until last week, eight out of their last nine games, how does a Detroit Lions team that has accomplished that with a guy, I mean, clearly, at least the quarterback, he's been identified as maybe one of the top three or four MVP candidates for a good chunk of this season, even though today, according to ESPN, it was down into the number six or seven range in terms of the poll. But certainly Matthew Stafford has to be a guy who would be on the Pro Bowl list.
He is not.
Why? Where is he?
He is listed as a quote-unquote alternate. I just, I mentioned that in my sports center. There are four Lions who are alternates: Stafford, Darius Slay, Matt Prater, and the punter Sam Martin.
But is he a preferred alternate?
Basically, in this case, Bob, what alternate means is, because at bare minimum, you know, Super Bowl participants will not be putting their players out there. So that's one of the areas where these alternates get in the game. So they might end
but my
up...
My point to that, Jim, is that he's not even a first alternate.
Nope.
He's not a premier preferred
the
alternate.
The quarterback's
he's
right.
He's a second alternate.
Yep.
In fact, just to chew on this, if you're a Lions fan, the only two players on your entire first place team to be listed as first alternates are your kickers.
Yep.
Sam Martin is a first alternate. Matt Prater is a first alternate.
Yep.
Matthew Stafford, Darius Slay are both second alternates. Meaning, if somebody doesn't play because of the Super Bowl or everything else we just talk about, people don't want to play, the first guy off the bench, if you will, or off of the, you know, from the non-roster to make it to the roster, isn't Matthew Stafford.
Correct.
And it's not Darius Slay if there's a cornerback opening.
That's right.
They got to wait for two guys to go down before these guys go into those positions.
Nuts, isn't it?
Holy hell.
And by the way, for the record, the NFC quarterbacks, or at least quarterbacks from NFC teams as of right now, are Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, and Dak Prescott. So then there's another guy, and then there's Matthew Stafford when you get to alternates. And though my indignation, Bob, started with that fact, the more I kept looking at the roster, the more I kept wondering, why is it Matt Prater, the NFC's kicker? You talk about a guy who, with his boot, who has been absolutely clutch this year. I mean, we talk a lot about the Stafford and his comebacks and all that stuff, but half the time, they're big, long boots by Matt Prater that are actually physically winning those games at the end. He lost out to Matt Bryant of the Falcons for the Pro Bowl spot. You did mention he's
the first alternate.
But at least
he's the first alternate.
Yes, he would be the first alternate. And when I looked up, because I wanted to look at some numbers as to why the heck that is, honestly, their numbers are pretty even at this point. Let's see. Bryant is 29 of 31 from field goals, long of 59. He's only missed one extra point all year. Matt Prater, very, very similar, 30 of 33. His long is 58. He's missed two extra points. So evidently, those who get the votes for this particular Pro Bowl selections evidently deemed Matt Bryant's clutch kicking a little better than Matt Prater's, but any Lions fan out there right now knows that Matt Prater may be one of the most clutch kickers in the game right now. It's unbelievable.
Some might be wondering, where's Golden Tate? Golden Tate's value to that offense and to specifically to Matthew Stafford, because they just don't have, a whole lot of marquee receivers. His 79 catches, and I know he's only gotten in the end zone three times, but his 79 catches for 942 yards has to mean something, doesn't it? Well, apparently not, because here are your NFC, if you will, and again, we don't know how they're going to play this thing, or at least I don't, because I just don't pay attention to it, and I don't care. But here are your NFC wide receivers. Julio Jones, that's a given. Odell Beckham, that's a given. They would be your starters. Mike Evans, certainly understandable. Larry Fitzgerald cranking back the clock a little bit and making this team as the fourth receiver on the Pro Bowl roster. But Golden Tate not there. We mentioned Matthew Stafford not there. And obviously there's nobody on the defense worthy of it, I would assume, other than Darius Slay, who, as we find out, is a second alternate. Is anybody else on the secondary on the defense that you would call a snub?
Not
about
really.
Glover Quinn?
No. I wouldn't call him a snob, no. Right. And I can't
say
Ziggy Ansah.
I'm looking for somebody who has stood out a little bit, and it's hard to find anybody on the defense.
I can't say Ziggy Ansah because I literally this past weekend watched him get his very first sack of the whole season, so it's not him. And by the way, Lions fans, to add insult to injury on this one, the Ofer Browns. Mostly this is going to be based on reputation. They do, in fact, have a Pro Bowler. Joe Thomas is going to be the starting left tackle for the 10th straight year.
Yeah, and 10 years in 10 tries, by the way, which is just a remarkable thing. Obviously, he's on his way to a first ballot Hall of Fame status when his career is over. But yeah, I mean, just to throw it out there, if you did not hear or if you don't have your smartphone at work and you're driving now and so you didn't hear who the Pro Bowl announcements or the Pro Bowl players were, I should say, for the NFC, I just gave you the wide receivers. The tackles are Tyron Smith of the Cowboys and Trent Williams of the Redskins. Jason Peters is a backup of the Eagles. Zach Martin of the Cowboys. You know the Cowboys are going to have a ton of offensive linemen.
Oh, yeah, they should.
Zach Martin of the Cowboys. Brandon Scherff of the Redskins. T.J. Lang of the Packers is the backup. The center is Travis Frederick, also of the Cowboys. So they got a guard to tackle in the center. And then Alex Mack, former Brown of the Falcons, is the backup there. Greg Olsen, Jordan Reed are your tight ends. Matt Ryan, you heard Jim talk about Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott. Zeke Elliott, David Johnson, Devontae Freeman of the Falcons. Your running backs, fullback is Mike Tolbert of the Panthers. And on the defensive side, I'll just run through them real quick. I know it's 4 o'clock, but Everson Griffin of the Vikings, Cliff Avril.
Former
Seahawks,
Lion Michael. Right there.
Say again?
Cliff Avril, former Lion.
Michael Bennett of the Seahawks, their defensive ends. Interior defensive lineman, Aaron Donald of the Rams, Gerald McCoy of the Bucks, Fletcher Cox of the Eagles. Outside backers, Vic Beasley of the Falcons, Ryan Kerrigan, Skins, Thomas Davis, Panthers. Inside backer, Bobby Wagner, Luke Kuechly of the Panthers. Quarterbacks are Janoris Jenkins of the Giants, Patrick Peterson, Richard Sherman, Xavier Rhodes. No surprise on those. Free safeties are Harrison Smith of the Vikings and Ha Ha Clinton Dix of the Packers. Strong safeties, Landon Collins. Special teamers, Johnny Hecker, Rams, Matt Bryant, as Jim just went down, over Matt Prater. Return specialist Cordell Patterson and special teamer Dwayne Harris. So those are your NFC Pro Bowlers. We'll run down some of the AFC guys after the break when we talk to Justin Rogers about some of this stuff and how it is that the Lions, a first-place team, can be snubbed that badly to the point where they don't even have a single player in the game. And the only two guys who are even first alternates are your special teamers. Nobody deserves to be there. From the Lions. That's a bit of a reach for me. So we'll get into that in a little bit more as we continue. Hour number two of the extravaganza coming right up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Ron James and a beautifully drawn up play by Ty Lue. Spins on him and scores.
LeBron James, the defense is backing up. That's when you attack.
LeBron. Falling and knocks it down from three. 3-0 as the buzzer sounded for 24 seconds. LeBron James sticks it coolly and calmly.
Yeah, he just turned around and shot over top of Parker that time.
LeBron James thinking about it. Sends it. Got it! Oh. Home button, LeBron James!
Oh.
He nailed it! Cavaliers by 2 with 24 ticks left. Final seconds ticking away. A wine-and-go winner. Good night, Milwaukee. We'll see you on the flip side of the queue.
I mean, big shots. They were going under all night, and we told them, if they go under, you got to step into it and take that shot. I mean, he can make that shot, and the last one was pretty far out. I didn't know he was going to take that one. I mean, it was a big shot that we needed, and you know, that's why he's the best player in the world.
Coach drew up a great play. It was for us to get a clear side, Channy flash of the ball, and my man went under my screen. I haven't hit my three ball tonight. I felt confident about it, and if guys going to go that far underneath my pick and roll, I got to be able to shoot it and knock it down, and I was able to do that.
He had some imaging this morning done in Cleveland, and he is going to require surgery on that thumb and is going to miss what I've been told is an extended period of time. They're still evaluating options. I don't really want to put a timetable on it because they're still doing it, so I'm not saying this is a timetable for him, but typically in the event of a surgery on a finger or a thumb, it's usually a 4 to 6 week injury.
They all go through a stretches of adversity, which they have to be able to overcome. They generally display that during the course of the year. I think our team's done that. I think our team's overcome a lot of adversity along the way and have all the makings for it. But the fact of the matter is you got to do it. I mean, that's the real key. There's no magic to it. So you got a little adversity you got to overcome and fight back and get yourself in position to do something. And, you know, you got the right kind of people, the right kind of men, you know, they'll come together and fight their way through it, you know, and get better. And that's kind of the path we're on right now.
It's going to start up front. You know, Ziggy Ansah, Haloti Ngata, Tyron Walker, they got to play a great game up front. It all starts with stopping Ezekiel Elliott and trying to get them behind in the down and distance. It sounds cliche, but if you don't stop the run with some success, it's impossible to get after a rookie quarterback. But when you get after the rookie quarterback, how do you do it? Because you really don't want to play man-to-man against Dez Bryant without Darius Slay. You're still going to struggle with Witten, Williams. They have a lot of guys that can hurt you. This is a tough, tough offense to stop.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
A tough, tough offense to stop. One that is just littered with Pro Bowlers. Up on the front line, a guard, a center, and a tackle. A wide receiver, I mean, a quarterback and a running back as well. Did they get any wide receivers? I missed it. No, Witten didn't make it, did he? No, he didn't.
No.
No, he didn't. And Dez Bryant missed too many games. So, okay, so you got a whole bunch, let's just put it that way, a whole bunch of All-Stars or Pro Bowl players on the Cowboys offense. And then a Detroit Lions defense with, well, if I had a cricket sound effect, I would play it right now. Nary a Pro Bowler on the defense. Oh, by the way, nary a Pro Bowler on the offense. Oh, by the way, not even a backup in either one of those places. You only find them on the alternate list. Joining us now to talk a little NFL, he covers the Detroit Lions and more for the Detroit News. Justin Rogers joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Justin, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Hey, I'm watching my two-year-old, so we'll see how this goes.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for spending a couple minutes. If you got to run to go take care of your little one, that's okay. You just let us know, okay? So what is your takeaway from the Pro Bowl list today? I mean, a 9-5 team, first place in Week 15, has not even a single backup on the NFC Pro Bowl roster.
Yeah, you know, I looked over, you know, the names on the Pro Bowl roster and the names that, you know, really were in contention for the Lions, and you know, I don't feel like there was a snub among them. I look at a snub as somebody that, you know, didn't make it over somebody that didn't deserve to make it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the roster, you know, I think Matthew Stafford, Darius Slay, Matt Prater, Sam Martin all had very strong cases, and I think if any of those guys had made it, nobody would have batted an eye. But you look at the guys that made it in front of them, and I don't think there's that big of a difference from any of those. You know, Stafford's got some really cool things going on this year with all the comeback wins, and I think that's really unique. And, you know, he's arguably the most valuable guy to his team over, you know, any other quarterback. But the three guys that made it above him, you know, are all on winning teams, all have better numbers than him in terms of passer rating, QBR, so quarterback efficiency numbers. So end of the day, like, I don't feel like any of the Lions players were snubbed. It's just a weird, fluky thing to have a first place team that doesn't have a Pro Bowler.
That's a very, very a great point. And to that end, Justin, does that really speak much more highly, perhaps, of Jim Caldwell than people realize? The fact that there's not a Pro Bowler on the team, and not even a snub, because nobody deserves it over the other guys, and yet they're a first place 9-win team with 2 weeks to play.
Yeah, I think it speaks to two things. One, as you mentioned, I think, you know, Caldwell's done a pretty good job this year. You know, I think that's why we're going to get into a very interesting discussion. If the Lions do happen to stumble in these last two games, you know, what does Bob Quinn do? I think you can make a really strong case to keep Caldwell, and I think you can make a case to move a different direction. And then two, I think it also speaks volumes to the quarterback depth in the NFL right now. We're just in an era of absolutely eye-popping numbers, efficiency across the board. You know, Matt Ryan doesn't get a lot of love up in these parts because, you know, the NFC South is just not a much talked about division, but Matt Ryan's career numbers are fabulous. He's right there with Stafford in career comebacks and fourth quarter game-winning drives. You know, he's an outstanding quarterback. His efficiency numbers are through the roof this year. Aaron Rodgers has really come on strong after a very sluggish start. He's got 10 more touchdowns than Stafford and one less pick. And you know, Prescott, what do you want to say? I mean, I understand he's got a great offensive line, a great running game, but that team is 12-2 for a reason, and he looked unbelievable last Sunday night. I mean, he's a very good player. He takes advantage of his circumstances, obviously, but I don't think you could penalize a guy for having good players around him.
No, you certainly can't. Justin Rogers talking NFL football and Lions with us this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, by the way, Ryan, as I talked about him last segment, and Rogers have identical 32-7 quarterback, or excuse me, touchdown to interception ratios. And they are both certainly well deserving of being on that list, as is Prescott for all the reasons you mentioned. You talked about how this is a quarterback rich era, and certainly at the very top of it, you're right. I mean, there's just no denying some of the numbers are just ridiculous. Is it that these quarterbacks are that good in your mind? This is a kind of a, I don't know, a philosophical, you know, state of the game kind of a question, Justin. Or is it just that the passing offenses have evolved in the way that they have, where the numbers are just, you know, even Drew Brees is nobody's Pro Bowler this year, and yet he's leading the league in passing yards. He continues to put up just these crazy numbers that make the numbers almost insignificant because so many guys are doing it. Is it the players that are that great, or is it the game and the strategies now?
No, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I think the top tier quarterbacks, the 10 or 15 guys that are in the upper echelon of the world, are better than maybe they ever have been. You know, I could, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, you know, those are guys that are all timers. You've got Eli Manning and Joe Flacco that have won a pair of Super Bowls that are maybe not in that top 10 discussion right now, which is kind of crazy. You know, Ben Roethlisberger has been good for a long time. And then you got Stafford, Phillip Rivers, Andrew Luck, guys that just put up these monster numbers. And so then that you go into the scheme. You know, I just think schemes have evolved. We see these rotations and the evolutions of football where the offense is ahead of the defense, or the defense is ahead of the offense. And right now this quick hitting passing game, a reliance on yards after the catch and kind of taking advantage of, you know, I think the lack of fundamentals in zone coverage and tackling, you know, really the offense, it's an offensive era. And, you know, the NFL rules also lean toward that too. You can't touch the receiver. If you breathe on him too hard, sure, it draws some sort of flag. You know, and that's what the NFL wants. And so be it. You know, defense are going to have to find a way. And you're seeing, you know, evolution there with guys like Deion Buchanan, you know, those hybrid safety linebackers that can cover more range, and you'll see more of that, I think, with guys like Jabril Peppers coming out of college. That's going to be the new wave of trying to just find more ways to cover more space. And, you know, Lions have been tinkering with something new this year. Maybe not new, but yeah, they give up something in the ballpark of 73% completions, which just seems so ugly on paper. But then you look at a game like last week, and Eli Manning completes 20 passes, but he only has 200 yards. You know, they give up these short passes, and then they tackle well, and it works for them. They're keeping opponents off the scoreboard. That, you know, opponent hasn't scored more than 20 points in the last 8 games now. So, you know, maybe that's just the new strategy is, you know, dare people to beat you short and make sure you're tackling well all game.
We're talking to Justin Rogers, a little NFL talk this afternoon, talking about the Lions, and we'll get into the matchup with the Cowboys in a second, but the fact that they had no Pro Bowlers just kind of jumping out after the announcement was made today. Jim Kushlin is here as well, and Jimmy's got one for you, Justin. Go ahead, Kush.
And, you know, Justin, I've been wondering this for a little bit now. I've kind of gotten the vibes nationally that there's not a lot of people, you know, that are buying into what the Lions are doing, and this was even before the loss against the Giants back on Sunday, and I'm wondering, from your vantage point, do you think that has anything to do with the fact that the only four guys who were even alternates, Stafford, Slay, Prater, and Martin, the two special teamers, Prater and Martin, are first alternates, and then Stafford and Slay are second alternates. Do you think that national vibe outside of this area, people not really buying into this team, do you think that showed up here?
Yeah, maybe with the fan vote, you know, and that's the one thing I really like about the Pro Bowl. I actually despise the idea of the Pro Bowl. I think it's a ridiculous concept, and nobody wants to watch that game. It's generally an awful football game at half speed. But the fact that fan voting only counts for one third of the process is such an improvement over, you know, leagues letting fans decide 100% of the vote. You know, you let coaches and players decide the other two thirds, and that's a big help, you know.
Yeah.
So there goes that 2-year-old.
But, I could kind of tell when you paused there for a second, you were distracted by your child. So no problem.
No, it's all right. Line. You know, but like I was saying, I don't think the players and coaches don't know who the Lions are and don't acknowledge what they're doing. I think that's more fans. There was a reason Lions didn't show up in any of the top five for fan voting, but I don't think that really holds up overall and through the whole process.
Justin, let's shift gears to what matters now, not postseason awards and honors, but winning this division. I kind of got on board all in full a couple of weeks ago. I said, I'm tired of trying to explain reasons why I don't think they can do it. Quit being so cynical, I said to myself. Just get on board. They continue to win games in late, late game fashion, exciting fashion in the fourth quarter and all that stuff. I said, I think they can win two out of their final three, but I thought one of them would be in New York. At the Meadowlands, and I thought they'd lose in Dallas, and then they'd win the home game finale against the Packers. Well, here we are. The first part didn't work out. The second part, I think, will work out. They're going to lose in Dallas, and the Packers are now much better than they were at the time I was thinking this. So do you see this happening in the big picture here, that they can win this division?
Yeah, I think they're still probably going to be the slight favorite, just naturally having a home game mm-hmm. against the Packers. They played them very well there the last couple of years. And, despite how well that team is playing, some of the flaws that they had are still existing. As long as the Lions can minimize the damage that offense does, then, they're going to have a shot in that game. It's going to be tough to beat Dallas. And the funny thing is, it might not matter. Maybe beating Dallas gets you the wild card, but end of the day, you want that division win. You want that home playoff game. And the New York game, 17-6, I don't think was completely indicative of how close that game was. Obviously, the Lions couldn't finish in the red zone, but you turn it over twice in the red zone and turn it over twice, an interception and a fumble. That's the difference.
Are we just kind of pretty much writing off the Dallas game as a loss? Because I kind of am. I had a little bit more hope for it last week because Prescott had struggled a little bit two games in a row. He didn't look like the wunderkind that he had for the first, in the 11-game winning streak. But then last week he goes out, of course, and goes 32 out of 36, a huge performance and a huge win in prime time, and they look like they're just clicking on all cylinders again. So is there anything that the Lions can do to win this game, if it's a shootout, if it's a slugfest? I don't think it's possible, really, for it to be a defensive battle, because that would mean they'd have to stop the Cowboys on a regular basis, and I don't think they can.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Dallas is an invincible. The Giants have proven that twice. They are going to have to find a way to stop Ezekiel Elliott. That is the number one thing they have to do, and that's a extremely difficult challenge. They just keep running at you with him over and over and over again, and it seems like every 10 carries or so he'll burst through the line for a big one. So if they can find a way to contain him, even if it's keeping him under 100 yards with 20 carries, I think they could have a shot. Certainly nobody in the organization is writing it off as a loss, but I'm already looking ahead to the Green Bay game, and I think that's the key one, and that's going to define the season.
Does Zeke make a return to the bucket after not getting fined the first time if he scores against the Lions?
Probably not. I think most of those guys like to be creative and even not copy themselves. That was a one-shot deal. It was fun. It was creative. It was interesting and amusing, but why do it twice? Why take away the magic of it?
Well, the main reason is because from what I heard, didn't donations go up some like 62% over last year after he did that? Everybody just said, man, maybe it was all in Dallas. I don't know. But people started dropping money in the buckets.
They did. And that's fabulous. I've always been annoyed with the NFL and how uptight they are with some of the celebrations and the fines and all that stuff. So yeah. I'm glad to see they didn't fine them. It does kind of break their standard that they set, but it was for a good cause. So people that get upset by that kind of stuff can be upset in their own homes, as far as I'm concerned.
I just think it's so silly, especially because they made so many specific rules about the number of guys you can dance with and all this other garbage. But here's the thing: I would love for Zeke, if he scores against the Lions, to get back in it again and then do that keep feeding me thing. That the guys do after they make a big play. And watch and see it happen again. I mean, it is a great cause. And if he just says feed me, as in feed this bucket, I mean, my gosh, he could just make such a difference. And oh, by the way, Ezekiel Elliott of The Ohio State University also said, even though he didn't get fined, he is going to make a personal big donation to the Salvation Army as well. So that makes it even more, more special. Kush, you got another one? Go ahead, brother.
Thinking specifically about this Dallas game, too, they've been doing so many things, obviously, offensively. They have the receivers. They have the line. All the things we know. If you're the Lions defense, which part of their game would you try to take away?
Oh, it's Elliott. I mean, you have to stop Elliott first. worry about the rest later. You know, the Lions outside cornerbacks have done a nice job this season, and Darius Slay is probably not going to play in this game. That's a big blow, but even Johnson Batamosi, who really struggled during training camp, it didn't look like he was going to be a suitable backup, has played pretty well when he's been called upon. Nevin Lawson's had a lot better season than people give him credit for. So, you know, you worry about every part of that offense, but if you take away their run game, make them one dimensional, like I mentioned, Dak Prescott had a wonderful game last Sunday night, but end of the day, he's still a rookie quarterback. I think you could still throw some disguise coverages at him, fool him, maybe get interception here and there. He's going to be prone to a rookie mistake if you do it right. If you take away the run, maybe you get that, and that's your break.
Last thing, Justin, we'll let you run. Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, both of their names have come up in the MVP discussions, and I know we talked about the Pro Bowl announcements before the rosters. ESPN's NFL MVP poll right now looks like this. Brady, far and away number one with 54 total points, followed by Derek Carr, Ezekiel Elliott, tied at 36, those two guys. Then Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford, Dak Prescott in that order. Any problem with those, especially with the guy at the top who's only played 10 games, whereas everybody else has played 14?
No, I don't have any problem with Tom Brady. I mean, he's been fabulous once again. I didn't hear. Did you mention Matt Ryan in that group?
Matt Ryan was fourth. Well, technically third because Carr and Elliott were tied for, with 36 points each, and then they had Matt Ryan coming in next with one first-place vote and 33 points.
Yeah, see, I might flip Ryan and Carr just with the way they've played over the course of the entire season. Carr's been very good as well. I think he has a little bit better wide receiver core in general. He's got more comebacks, which is nice, but he laid an absolute dud in a critical game against Kansas City a couple weeks ago, and you know, it's also about how you finish as well. I'd probably find a place for Le'Veon Bell in there, too. I mean, that guy is just a monster. I know he also has the suspension.
Yeah, he actually checked in on this list, and I think they only went to 10 here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He was 10th. Le'Veon Bell finished behind David Johnson, another running back. So two running backs, Elliott and Johnson, finished ahead of Bell, or at least are ahead of Bell right now in this week-by-week ESPN poll.
Johnson's really good, too, but the fact that the Cardinals are so bad kind of disqualifies him, unfortunately, because that's just the nature of the award. But, man, I just love the way Le'Veon Bell plays. I know he had the suspension like Brady that kind of took away some of his availability, but he's averaging something like 160 yards from scrimmage right now. It's just a really ridiculous number. He changes games for that Pittsburgh organization.
He did. I totally agree with you, and I think, honestly, all due respect to the rookie Ezekiel Elliott, I think if I'm starting a team with a running back, or let me rephrase, if I'm starting a team, when it comes time to pick my running back, I think we'd always start a team with a quarterback. I might go Le'Veon Bell because of everything that he does so well. And Ezekiel Elliott is on his way to being that too, but Le'Veon Bell is a very, very special kind of a talent. And you're right, I think he has made the difference for that Steeler team. Remember, he missed the first three with a suspension, and 160 yards a game from scrimmage is far and away the best in the National Football League.
I hate that we don't ever put defenders in this discussion, but I put Khalil Mack up there too. I mean, he's just one of those guys that does everything so well. He's a game changer, a game plan wrecker, if you will. And I, as another guy, I love the way he plays the game. It's one of those where you just tune in, you can just watch him every play and be impressed.
How many defensive players have won NFL MVP? Did LT win one? Did LT ever get named that?
You know, I don't know. Kicker did somehow one year.
But I mean, because, you know, we talk about this from time to time, especially after the, you know, three monster seasons that J.J. Watt had. And, you know, he's up there in the discussion, but I don't think usually any higher than five, I want to say. And I'm wondering, did LT ever do it? Did going back in time, did Butkus ever
LT get
it?
Did win one 1986. And
there you go.
And yeah, Mark Moseley, there's the kicker you're referring to, Justin. That was 1982 when he was a Redskin.
That's insane.
And then Alan Page of the Vikings in 71. That's literally the last non-running backs or quarterbacks to win it.
Right. There you
I think
go.
Drinking was allowed in the press box back in those days.
I think that might be right. But, you know, I mean, I agree with you, though. I really wish non-quarterbacks in general would get more looks, in defense especially. But even as I look at it, Adrian Peterson in 2012, LaDainian in 2006, and Sean Alexander the year before that in 2005. The only running backs in the last, 15 years. You got to go back, Marshall Faulk in 2000, so we'll extend it to 16 years. Four times in the last 16 years it's been a running back, all the rest are quarterbacks, and I don't like it.
And never a receiver.
Not one receiver
on that list, which
That's
is crazy because Jerry Rice put up that crazy 14-game season where he had 1,800-plus yards. I mean, he should have won it that year. I think he finished second. You know, Calvin probably was – I don't think he ever finished more than, like, fifth or sixth. It's just it's just never been a position that's been considered.
1,900 yards or whatever it was. Randy Moss never won it.
Nope, they gave it to Brady that year because I think he had 50 touchdowns.
There you go. That's
they can argue.
Right. And I don't know for sure what year that Rice put up that season you were just talking about, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that Montana or Young or whoever the hell was thrown to him at the time probably won the thing.
Probably.
Yeah, they just don't value the receiver's contribution to that passing game. But anyway, hey, Justin, really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for making the time. Merry Christmas to you, your family, especially your little two-year-old running around there. Hope Santa's good to him, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you guys as well.
Thank you so much, Justin. Justin Rogers joining us from the Detroit News, covers the Detroit Lions. Really good stuff, as always. And, I'm looking for all of the non-quarterbacks. Just going back.
I just named all three. I just scanned the rest of the list that goes back to 57 with Jim Brown. I just named all three. Defensive tackle, Alan Page in 71,
yep.
LT in 86, and Mark Mosley, the kicker, in 82. That's it. The rest are all running backs or quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, I was even just getting to the running backs, too. You know, Jim Brown, as you mentioned, two times in a row, 57, 58. Then Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor, two different Packers. How about that? That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Two different Packers in 61 and 62 back-to-back years. Then Jim Brown again in 65. Then quarterbacks until Alan Page, as you mentioned, in 71. Then running back Larry Brown of the Redskins. Then running back O.J. Simpson in 73. Next, Walter Payton in 77. Earl Campbell, the year he had in 79. He had 1,934 yards rushing in his rookie year. He was just a beast. And I'll never forget that Monday night game. That he had against the Dolphins. It was just a man running over and around and past boys. Earl Campbell, so that was in 79. You mentioned Mosley, which is stupid. Marcus Allen in 85. Then you mentioned LT in 86. Thurman Thomas. Thurman Thomas was league MVP in 1991. I did not know that. I did not know that. How about that? Jim Kelly, for all of his Hall of Fame career numbers, never won it, but Thurman did on that team. 92, Steve Young of the Niners won it. That might be the year that we were talking about that Rice put up those crazy numbers. Then Steve Young again in 94. Emmitt Smith, 93 in between them. I forgot we're looking at non-quarterbacks here. Terrell Davis, Marshall Faulk, Sean Alexander, LaDainian Tomlinson, and then Adrian Peterson. Those are your non-quarterbacks in the history of the MVP award. All right, but to the point there, which we kind of got off track a little bit, but to Justin's point, I would love to see defensive players get more recognition. Tell me there wasn't a year in which, you know, Mean Joe Green wasn't the best player in football. Just like Alan Page was in 77 with the Vikings. There have been defensive linemen. Tell me that J.J. Watt didn't deserve that. Tell me that LT didn't deserve it again, perhaps. Tell me that Dick Butkus at one point in time wasn't the most dominating player in football and deserved that award. Defensive players are never going to get the love. And how about the fact that never a wide receiver? Never.
I wouldn't have guessed that without looking at the list.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't have either. You know, because they don't have a problem giving them the MVP of the Super Bowl. You know, there have been Super Bowls where Jerry Rice won it, where Lynn Swan won it, where who else? I'm trying to think of other. I don't have them all committed to memory, but those just jumped up to the top of my head. But at any rate, when there are great receiver games in the Super Bowl, that obviously is accompanied by a great game by his quarterback. And so it's, you know, they're going to cancel each other out. And if it's in doubt, they usually give it to the quarterback. But they've done it to the receiver, but not in the full season MVP.
Yeah, same with the defensive side. Two of the last three have been linebackers for Super Bowl MVP. Von Miller last year, Malcolm Smith 2 years ago with the Seahawks.
Hey, let's shine our spotlight, as we do each and every Wednesday, on the youngsters doing great work on the high school fields, courts, mats, etc. It is the KeyBank High School Athlete of the Week. For the girls this week, Alyssa Schneider of Maumee Basketball led the Panthers with 22 points and helped spark a fourth-quarter comeback, which forced overtime, where Maumee would beat Rossford Sunday 50-45. For the boys, Brett Lauf of Napoleon Basketball led all scorers with 38, including eight threes, though it would not be enough as Napoleon fell Friday 2-1. Fossey on 68-64. If you've got an athlete you would like to nominate as the KeyBank High School Athlete of the Week, send those nominations to us at athlete@1065theticket.com. Hey, before we get a quick time out here to make some room for Jason Candle, the head coach of the University of Toledo Rockets football team, as they are now into their postseason after their bowl game, how about some hockey? We'll go see the Toledo Walleye play Wheeling at the Huntington Center this Tuesday, the 27th, a couple of days after Christmas, kind of a late present from us to you. Just be callers 4, 5, and 6. I will give each of those three callers a pair of tickets to the Walleye and Wheeling game at the Huntington Center on Tuesday, the 27th. That's just for you at 866-240-1065. Get a quick timeout for SportsCenter. Come back, talk UT football with head coach Candle coming up next right here on ESPN 106.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hanging out with you, continuing some of our football talk, switching gears though to some college football now, and we're kind of knee deep in bowl season. It's all the games playing on, and over the past weekend the bowl season started, and one of those games involved the Toledo Rockets in the Camellia Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama, where they took on the Sunbelt champ Appalachian State Mountaineers. Toledo did not fare as well as they fell in this one, 31-28, to finish the season 9-4 overall. And to help us recap the bowl season and kind of put a bow on the Toledo Rockets 2016 football season, we welcome in one final time this year the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, before we get into any of that real quick, knowing how college coaches work, I got a hunch that says you're already out there somewhere recruiting. Any info on where you might be at for that one?
Well, I'm in Toledo. We're currently in a dead period for recruiting, so it's they don't allow you at this time of year to be on the road recruiting other than, you know, just on your cell phone and doing work at your computer. So, but yeah, I mean, if you're awake and you're breathing, you're definitely recruiting.
Fair enough. It looks like I kind of guessed wrong on that one. I've been wrong before. But let's get to this bowl game, Coach. 31-28, the final. We knew Appalachian State was going to be a tough nut to crack. They were the Sun Belt champs. The win in this bowl game gave them 10 wins on the season. Quite frankly, I thought out of the five bowl games back on Saturday to start the bowl season, this was the most entertaining. Back and forth, you guys were able to, for a good while in this game, match score for score. But then towards the end, in your last possession, and kind of walk me through this one, because I'm trying to figure out what the thinking was on this one. You guys had a 4th-and-1 situation where you could either kick the field goal to tie the game at 31 or maybe give it to Kareem Hunt or somebody on a 4th-and-1. You elected to take the delay a game, move you back 5 yards, try the field goal, and it missed to tie, which ultimately gave the Mountaineers the win. Walk me through that sequence of what led to that decision.
Yeah, I think we were in a situation where, you know, Kareem, you know, had come out of the game, and, you know, we had been playing with, you know, some good tempo and good speed, you know, and we had a play called fast, and when he came out and subbed, you know, the refs, they kind of hold things up when you sub. So kind of slowed us down there a little bit, and then, you know, we kind of missed on a blocking assignment on the short run and got stopped short. You know, then it was, you know, the decision to either go forward on 4th-and-1, like you were saying, or, you know, kick a tight field goal right there. Well, you know, I didn't feel like kicking it that tight on the left hash and, you know, him having a really tight angle. So we took the delay to try to give him a little bit better angle, and he just didn't make the kick, you know. So not the outcome we had anticipated or wanted, but that's the one we got to live with.
Now, despite the outcome and despite that, some outstanding outings, I thought, once again from Logan Woodside and Kareem Hunt in his final game. Woodside, 18-26, 247, 2 touchdowns, didn't have a pick. Kareem Hunt, 120 on the ground, 2 touchdowns in his final game as a Toledo Rocket, as a collegiate athlete. Tell me about their performances.
Yeah, I thought they both played really well. I mean, you know, you talk about Kareem Hunt and you give him a lot of credit. I mean, you're hearing all over college football now, guys, you know, McCaffrey, you know, you Leonard Fournette, guys like that, they're choosing not to play in bowl games. And our senior running back, all he did was go break the school rushing record and, you know, give us another 100-yard game and give us everything he had in his final outing. So you know, hats off to him and his commitment to Toledo and in our university and our football program. You know, Logan was good again, you know, as he's been steady, consistent all year long. You know, but I don't know as generally as an offense if we played our best game. I thought we, you know, were very inconsistent at times, you know, some self-inflicted wounds in key situations, you know, penalties and, you know, some, you know, just some uncharacteristic things that I thought, you know, turned around the butt, us in the butt a little bit. So, certainly some things to look forward to in the off season, but two great players, like you mentioned, that we're going to miss dearly.
You know, and that's interesting. And, you know, Coach, we're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Ticket. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up in the context of, well, you know, our senior played in the bowl game while some players don't. This has actually been a topic we've been talking about the last 2 days as those stories have come out about some of these guys at some bigger schools, LSU and Stanford in this case, deciding not to play in their bowl game. What's your position on that then? And what, if anything, should the NCAA or schools do about it?
Well, I think I don't necessarily know if I definitely have the answer or what the solution would be, but I do think that, you know, we're in a world where it's coach driven a little bit and not player driven. I mean, you watch guys take coaching jobs at bigger schools and bigger levels and they get applauded for it. And then a kid decides that he's going to protect his future a little bit, not playing a bowl game, and everybody crushes him for it. So, you know, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a double standard a little bit. But I think that, you know, like in Kareem's situation, you know, a guy who's given his heart and soul to the program and he wants to go out and take pride in having one more time at it. You know, I think that's the way it should be done. But I also see the other side of the coin where at that point in time in a bowl game where maybe, you know, there's not as much riding on it for that particular player as maybe what the future looks like. Maybe taking a back seat, but it's certainly something that definitely will have to be addressed in the future.
Yeah, because we've been seeing it a lot recently, especially, and like I said, Coach, we've here on these airways have been talking about it these last couple of days as well, as we're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Ticket. 31-28 back on Saturday. Rockets fall to Appalachian State in the Camellia Bowl. Going through this game again, you were talking about some of the things offensively that you felt you were inconsistent, but I got to ask about a special teams play that went awry. Right after you guys tie the game on Logan Woodside's second touchdown pass, tied it in the third quarter, 21-21, then you give up a big kick return for a touchdown, one of those special teams breakdowns that happened. And as this game then went on through the remainder of the second half, I thought that turned obviously into a huge play considering how this thing finished out.
Yeah, that was enormous. That was we had some momentum generated and felt like we were pushing, you know, momentum meter over to us, to our side. And, you know, they were able to answer back with a really good individual play by their kick returner. You know, we didn't tackle him. We didn't get him on the ground. A couple guys out of their gaps and, you know, a couple questionable blocks by them. You know, but you can't, you know, cry foul and worry about a holding call or, you know, whatever. Bottom line is you got to get off the blocks and go tackle the guy and get him on the ground, and we just didn't do it.
Talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets. And a lot of times this season, Coach, we've brought up Kareem Hunt, obviously. But now that the season's over, there are other seniors who will not be donning the midnight blue and gold anymore as they will have finished their eligibility and things like that. So talk to me about some of the other seniors that contributed so much to this team and how much they mean to you.
Yeah, I think there's so many guys. There's that's a long list, and there's a long list each and every year. You know, it's you grow with these guys for 4 years. In my case, you know, I know some of these assistant coaches are new and it's their first year with them, but, you know, you certainly gain an appreciation for, you know, you see the whole product, you know what they were in high school, what their background is, and you watch them go through numerous tough times. You know, you watch them, you know, struggle with making the adjustment to college. Some guys struggle academically until they really get it figured out and, you know, can understand what a college course load is and all of those things. And just to watch them push through it all, you know, and really finish it off and do it the right way. And, you know, hopefully, you know, a couple of guys, these last few guys in this class will end up finishing up with their degree in the spring, as many of them have already finished at the midpoint this semester or even last spring. And we get them all graduated and on to, you know, to start their life as a young man. And I think, you know, I've said this before, I think you're looking at good future husbands here and good future fathers and people that will, you know, certainly have left Toledo a better place than what they found it. And I think that's what we're asking all of our kids to do when we sit in their living rooms when they're 17 and 18-year-old high school seniors.
Very well said, Coach. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. 31-28, the Rockets season comes to an end with a bowl loss in the Camellia Bowl back on Saturday to Appalachian State. And that puts an interesting conundrum for me on this next question, because on the one hand, you guys had another pretty good, outstanding season, 9 wins at the end of the day, but 2 of those 4 losses came in your last 2 ball games played, the Western Michigan game back on Black Friday. Friday, and then this bowl game. Does the sting of those 2 losses to those kind of opponents and the way they went down, does it take any luster off of a 9-win pretty good season, or is that just one of those things that, you know, you got to put it all together with the whole?
Well, I think the Western Michigan deal is ultimate. You know, obviously you didn't get a chance to go play for the MAC West, or the, you know, the MAC to represent the MAC West in the MAC championship game, so that obviously stung, because that's what you set out all year to do. You know, and now at this time this year compared to this time last year, you're going into the off season coming off of a loss instead of riding the emotion of a win. So, you know, and just the momentum that we carried into the off season last year, I thought was very positive energy and very, very good to generate, you know, some buzz throughout the off season. And now that's going to be much different as we approach and look to 2017, because now you're talking, you know, a little bit of salt in your mouth from a loss and, you know, to finish the year. And certainly, you know, you'll have some guys that, you know, I hope will be really focused when they come back in January and ready to go. And, cause we got a lot of work to do. And, you know, certainly January, February, March will be really tough months around here to get prepared, you know, to get ready to go throughout the summer and prepare for, you know, what is a great schedule next year.
And then there's you, Coach. Last year at this time, you were taking over for Matt Campbell during the bowl game as that hire, of course, as sometimes they do in college football, took place at around this time. But now we sit here basically 1 calendar year later. You've been at the helm of the Rockets now as head coach for the full off season with the recruiting and then through this whole season and a bowl game. So tell me some of the things that you learned being the head coach for this full season, your first go around here in Toledo.
Yeah, I don't think you ever stop learning. I think there's something new each and every day that you learn from, and you try to fix and try to make better. I think where coaches get into a real problem is when you don't learn from those situations and you don't fix things. You know, I think our staff is, you know, still, you know, in the infancy stages of, you know, being together and gelling as one. You know, it's a situation where, you know, coaching staff is, it takes time, and the continuity there certainly helps that. And I think the longer we grow together, and certainly, you know, some of those things will iron themselves out. But, yeah, I think you learn a lot of stuff. You learn each and every day of how things are done right or how things maybe weren't done correctly and what you can do to fix. And I think there's always self-evaluation. I think there's always program evaluation. I think there's always evaluation of coaches and people. And I think it's all positive, because I think there's also, you know, it creates good conversation. It creates good, you know, growth. And I think, you know, to get where we want to go, we have to continue to grow. And that's certainly what we're trying to do.
Coach, it's been a pleasure to talk to you over the course of the season. Sorry it didn't finish the way we all would have liked to have seen it, but still nonetheless a successful, I think, anyway, first full season as head coach of the Rockets, even with the bowl loss. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, enjoy the holidays, best of luck out there on the recruiting trail, and I'll talk to Paul Helger. We'll try to find a way right around the good old signing day to have you back on and get an update on that. But in the meantime, enjoy the holidays, and best of luck out there on the recruiting trail, Coach, and thanks so much for spending time with us over the course of the season.
Well, I appreciate all you do for our city and Toledo football, and you have a Merry Christmas and enjoy your holidays as well. But, you know, please don't feel bad for the Rockets. We'll be back and ready to go and better than ever next year.
I couldn't have said that last part any better myself. Thanks so much, Coach. Take care.
All right, Jim. I'll see you.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, chatting with us one final time to put a bow on this 2016 Rockets football season. Obviously, as we know, didn't end the way Rocket fans and all of us around here would have wanted. This was a team that was at 1.9-2 heading into that Black Friday game against Western Michigan. We know how that turned out, and Western Michigan finishes undefeated, and they got a Cotton Bowl date with Wisconsin, of course, as the best of the rest group of five, whatever you want to call it, bid to the New Year Six. Then, of course, the Rockets are falling to tough Appalachian State team. You know, this isn't your older brother's Appalachian State anymore. They're not that one double-A team that sneaks up on Michigan at the Big House. No, this is a 1A team, and they're now a conference champion. Remember, they came into that Camellia Bowl back on Saturday as the Sun Belt champion, and with the win over the Rockets, they get a 10-win season at the 1A level. So that's a program on the rise, and it was a bummer the way that game ended. Ended up, especially that last sequence of plays, and I'm glad Coach, you know, kind of explained it, you know, the way he did. It was one of those decisions that you have to live with as a coach, but it was fun talking to him, of course, over the course of the season. He has it right there. This team will be back. There's still a lot of good things, even though the Kareem Hunts of the world are set to graduate and all of that. This is still going to be a solid program. They're probably going to have a pretty good recruiting class, and like I did kind of mention, I'll work around with Paul Helgren and the rest over there at UT, and we'll try to find a way to get Coach on right around signing day to get a little update. Of course, that's early February, so we got some time on that one. But the Rockets, a 9-4 season, and I think more good things are on the way. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Mike Miller coming up next with his doubleheader from the Loft at Sylvania Tam O'Shanter. First, it's Drive Time, then Face Off the Hockey Show. So enjoy all that. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.